Saturday, April 13th, was as near idyllic as a day can be. Even the headlines were easing up. D.C. curfew off. Gradual pullout of GIs starts. Only one abrasive story. RFK lauded by McNamara in TV tapes. After the strenuous, demanding last 13 days, or is it two lifetimes, this was sort of an island of rest and peace this weekend. In the morning, I drove into Johnson City with Mr. Myers and Mr. Griffiths from the post office department to discuss with them the possible new post office in Johnson City. They showed me the sights, the price, what it would do to revive the little town, all dictated the site of the present post office, plus an adjoining building. It would make a good little package there, right next door to the bank, which looks so grand, and across from the courthouse, which Victorian monstrosity though it is rather well kept and has distinction. We drove past the LCRA building and the complex of homes for elderly citizens, which together with the bank set a certain tone of excellence for the little town. At least they have a mark to aim toward. I love the native stone, or the cedar-shaped shingle, or the weathered-looking board and batten, and hope that some of those can be incorporated into the post office. Their plans do call for a porch. And I like that because a little town post office is, in a way, a sort of social center, a meeting place. We talked of getting O'Neill Ford to give some design direction, though their own architect would do most of the work. We couldn't reach him. He was somewhere in North Carolina. We went to A.W.'s office, and they discussed the possibility of getting options on the various possible sites. And I was chagrined about what some of these people think they're going to get someday for this land. Then we were back at the ranch by 11:30. And after lunch, we began one of those long, idyllic, open-end trips, going first in the chopper to the Green Mountain Ranch, Lyndon and A.W. and the Crims. It was a blue and gold day, crisp and bright. We rode around the Green Mountain Ranch in Broncos, and every stream had running water, and every hillside had bluebonnets. We stopped beside an old stone fence. How these old stone fences fascinate me. The story is they were built after the Civil War in the first decade or two by Mexican labor for 10 cents a day. And we got some good movies, I think. This is the most beautiful spring I remember. There were lots of tall yellow flowers and some white Mexican poppies. The cattle looked fat and the deer were plentiful. And we were happy and in perfect peace. Then we helicoptered over to the Davis place, and there was a sight I shall always remember. A long, rolling expanse of green pasture, dotted with some of the biggest live oaks on any ranch we have. A sea of white Mexican poppies, and scattered through them, jet black Angus cattle. It is very pleasant to be with someone who appreciates the same things you do. Matilda Krim is as curious about all the wildlife, as excited about all the varieties of flowers, as alive to it all as I am. Even better, she is great joy to Lyndon, as is Arthur. Yeah. She and I got out alone and took a little sojourn, walking down toward Long Branch, so named by A.W., in honor of my favorite TV program, Gunsmoke. And our movie cameraman was with us. Long Branch is fuller than I have ever seen it. There are still clear pools and swift little rapids, and here and there a waterfall. We climbed over the big granite boulders and lounged on the sandbars and walked through the fields of bluebonnets that come right down to the water's edge while the cameraman ground away. Someday, perhaps, this will be useful. In the visitor center at the Johnson Park, we have some good film of the wildlife and the wildflowers of the Edwards Plateau. Then we flew over to the Haywood Ranch and got in Lyndon's speedboat. He loves to tease, and he knows how much I dislike speed. So most of the time, we went at a slow and placid rate, and we found ourselves the middle of an armada, boats of every size and type on each side. And then, as the Lano entered the Colorado, he let her out, and she gained speed, and we outdistanced nearly everybody. I honed the edges and gritted my teeth. While Lyndon, with obvious pressure, said, "Now, I'm not going too fast for you. Isn't this fine? Isn't this fine?" And acted as though he simply could not hear my objections. We stopped at the beach house, and he and Matilda got in the ridiculous little blue car. Arthur and I were in a larger car, and followed them to the Krim Ranch. There, we sat on the front porch in the rocking chairs, congratulating Matilda on the charm of the home she has created. As far as you can see now, in every direction, they own the land. And then Lyndon and A.W. and I got in the chopper. The Krems would have joined us at the West for dinner. And we went back to the ranch, and Lyndon to his desk, and stacks of mail and phone calls. It was nearly 2 hours before I could dislodge him. A little past 8, we landed at the West Ranch to see a strange, bloody red moon rising, ominous foreboding. And across the sky, the long white trail of a jet. It was dark and a strange sight, a dramatic combination. The men settled at once into one of their domino games where Lyndon and A.W. play together, and there's great use of signals and teasing, and as much talk as skill. And then we had one of Neva's delicious dinners. For longer than 20 years, I've enjoyed the hospitality of this house, and in country fashion, left very soon after dinner, and we're back at the home ranch before 11. What a good way to spend a day. That is, in contrast to those that have gone before. And here I am back counting again. It's 2 down and 54 to go. That is, counting the weeks for Chuck. I had begun counting about Lyndon's term of office just when, I don't know, but I know it was before he was halfway through, because I was counting for the halfway point, and thereafter, counting for the time when he could make the announcement that he wasn't going to run again. But except for the boys, it has been the sort of day when time stood still and he was satisfied with the present and didn't reach for anything else. Oddly, when I had told Lyndon that Lindbergh was not going to come with us to Texas this time, he had been a little irritated and said why. And I explained that he was really just bone tired and had to get some rest, physically and emotionally tired. And he had said, "She's not pregnant, is she?" And I said, "Yes. Don't you remember?" She had told me on February the 29th, she and Chuck, sitting beside the bed in my room, quite simply, not as a for sure fact, but as almost sure, and since then she's hardly mentioned it at all. If it were Lucy, she would be delighted to give you a progress report every day. Yes, her daddy said. She had told him that they had hopes. But nobody had come back to tell him that it was absolutely sure. He seemed a little hurt. And when I told him that she wasn't feeling very well, he said, "You've got to get the best doctor. Now, do you be sure they know what they're doing? You call Jim Kane and you talk to that doctor yourself, and you make sure that she's doing everything right." What a family man he is. And so, thank God for a good day.